Hello, and welcome to the Cancer Horizons podcast. In each episode, you'll hear from patients, survivors, caregivers, advocates, or healthcare professionals to do what CURE does best: provide cancer updates, research, and education. It's been 9 years since Christina McAmis, a mother of three who had just started law school, found a lump about half the size of a grain of rice near her sternum. Christina eventually received a diagnosis of stage 4 breast cancer. Chemotherapy, then surgery to remove her breasts and ovaries, followed. In this episode of CURE's Cancer Horizons podcast, Christina and a member of her care team, Dr. Claudia DeYoung, an internist specializing in breast health who runs the Center for Breast Health at the South Sacramento Kaiser Permanente Medical Center and its Breast Cancer Survivorship Program, discuss Christina's cancer journey, the importance of follow-up visits, and how Christina and her family, including her 17-year-old twin sons and 9-year-old daughter, have navigated this journey together.
I was always very aware of breast cancer. And although, you know, there was some family history of breast cancer, you know, so I was very aware of breast cancer. And so I had started seeing Dr. DeYoung actually when my daughter was just 6 months old. Just trying to get established into breast health and trying to just cover my bases. And we had found, my husband and I had found, a very, very, very small, like half the size of a grain of rice type lump in close to my sternum. And we had decided that we needed to get that checked out. So we had done an ultrasound and determined that it seemed like just a lymph node. I was still nursing, so having a lymph node swollen in that area was not surprising. I had just started law school, so my nursing schedule had been completely changed because of that. My daughter never did ever take a bottle, so it was just kind of, well, it's changed. And so we had decided to watch that, and that if there were changes, to let Dr. DeYoung know. I got wrapped up in law school, as you do, especially your first year. It was a couple weeks before midterms. I got a call. I was driving home from picking up the boys from school, got a call that I needed to come home right away. My townhouse was on fire. And literally the townhouse next door burnt down to the ground. We were lucky enough just to sustain some really heavy smoke damage. I spent that night with my 12-month-old, who does not sleep well at other people's houses, at my friend's house. And it was like 6 a.m. when I had to wake up to go in for my checkup with Dr. DeYoung. And I was like, I'm not doing this. But somewhere in the back of my brain was just like, you've got to do this. It needs to just happen. So I pulled on my big girl boots and tromped off to Dr. DeYoung's office. And we decided to biopsy at that point because the mass had not gotten really much bigger, but also had not gone away at all. And I was having mastitis type symptoms at that point. And my husband thought it was just engorgement from the breastfeeding changes and whatnot. And we decided to biopsy. And then that night it might have been a couple of days. I don't remember the exact timeline at this point, but I was in class in torts and got a phone call. And I think it was like 5:30, 5:45 at night. And I remember trying to get up and like get my stuff without interrupting the class to be able to take the call, because it was from Dr. DeYoung, and you know, doctors don't call you for good news. And she left a voicemail just saying that I needed to call her in the morning. And I think then I knew that it wasn't great news, but I didn't know what I was gonna hear. I called the next day and got the news that it was cancer, but I was young. It wasn't a big mass. Things looked relatively good. You know, we talked about, you know, possible lumpectomy, and we talked about, you know, that it was very treatable. And then I went in for more biopsies and skin punches and core biopsies, I think is what it was called. Dr. DeYoung can fill in on that. And when we did the axillary, the armpit area lymph node ultrasound, a couple of those, I shouldn't say a couple, some of those look suspicious. And we did some more biopsies. And every biopsy that we did came back positive for cancer. And so then the conversation shifted to, you know, you're young and, you know, it's in your lymph nodes, but, you know, we can do some chemotherapy. There's still treatments, you know, you should be good, but you need to talk to the oncologist. So then Dr. Wong got involved and said, you're young, things look good, but let's just make sure we know what we're fighting here before we send you off for a lumpectomy and chemotherapy. So we did a PET scan, and when we did the PET scan, we got more news. There was a lesion on my breastbone, right above my heart. And at that point, we decided that to stop playing. This was stage four, that it had metastasized. And I went in for my port to be placed, I think just days later.
Dr. DeYoung, knowing now in hindsight what we know about Christina's disease and the diagnosis she eventually did receive, how important was it that she and you had a pre-existing relationship, that she had already been seeing you, and that she, the morning after that fire, decided to come in for that appointment when she was thinking she didn't want to come in? How crucial were those two factors in getting her to where she is today?
Well, I think amazing that we have had the relationship. We have had a very unique relationship because I met Christina before her diagnosis and was part of her care team during diagnosis and treatment and into survivorship, and am still part of her care team now. I think that breast health, like any area of the body, it's important to be proactive. You know, I really try to have a rapport with my patients and educate them that they need to be aware of their own body. My exam, her initial impression, the initial evaluation is as only good as that point in time. And that's why I always tell all my patients, any new changes, any concerns, come back in. That's why I will track my patients down if they're overdue, because morally and professionally, it's the right thing to do, and things change, things evolve. So yeah, hindsight 2020, you know, that grain of a pea-sized lump that Christina and her husband had felt, looked on imaging benign, but it wasn't. We couldn't have known that at the time. Again, hindsight 2020, but that follow-up is crucial. That follow-up by Christina, that follow-up by her care team. And so I'm just, I'm glad we stayed on it. And again, there's always, you know, hindsight and coulda, woulda, shoulda. But the fact of the matter is, we made the best decision at the point in time with the evidence that we had, with the agreement that we're going to monitor this. And if it goes away, then great. If it doesn't, or if it changes, then we're going to go down a different route. And we were true to that plan, and thank goodness we were.
And Christina, how old are your kids now?
My twins are 17 now, and my daughter is 9.
And how have you and your husband spoken with them about your cancer experience, and how have you helped them navigate
what the entire family has gone through over the years.
Well, in the beginning, Maddie was too young. I mean, she was 13 months old when I was diagnosed. So, when I talk about this part of the conversation, I'm focusing on my then 7, 8 year olds. We talked a lot about how cancer is, for me, because it had metastasized, it was going to be a war, not just a battle. And that when we went in with really, really wide spectrum chemotherapy in the beginning with the Taxotere, it was essentially a nuclear bomb that we were dropping to try to wipe out any enemy soldiers that could be on the battlefield and any fortresses that they could have built, such as the tumor that we could feel. And that there's probably a lot of enemy soldiers just in the jungle of my body, so to speak, that we needed to try to find and eradicate. And so that Taxotere did such an amazing job of that, and I'm probably skipping ahead there. I say there was a lot of awful that went between diagnosis and getting the news that I was in no evidence of active disease, and it was amazing. So I don't want to understate that, but at that point, I still have ongoing treatments to this day, every 3 weeks for the last almost 9 years now, infusions at the clinic. And I'm allergic to the drugs that they're using, so there's some extra burden there, but there aren't any other options. So but that's deeper, darker stuff. When I talked to my kids, I said that that ongoing chemotherapy treatment was trying to target and send little ground units in to infiltrate the jungle and try to find any last remaining enemy soldiers and trying to wipe them out before they could build a rebel base. And we jokingly talk about the Death Star being the original tumor, that the Death Star has been destroyed, but here we are. We don't want them building a rebel base. So that's also what the PET scans do, is they scan my body for any rebel activity. And so that's how I talk to my kids about it. I also told them that right now we're living. I'm living, and we're going to focus on the living. And that if that changes and I am actively dying, that we are going to shift focuses then and worry about the dying then. Because it does us no good to worry about the dying now. We need to be focused on the living. And I call that irrational optimism. And so I definitely lose my. I don't know, is this podcast PG or is it?
Yes.
Okay, I lose my poop on occasion. And we have a saying in my household, which is give me just a moment to let it out, and then I will put all my poop in a group and we'll get back up and on the road to doing whatever it was that we're doing. I am definitely like a little pressure cooker, right? I always have water and pressure and steam. And every once in a while, I've got to let that steam off. But I don't ever get to actually empty the pot.
And does talking with them in these kind of metaphorical terms of, the battlefield and Star Wars and all of that, does that help you visualize it in your own mind as well, and kind of help motivate you through the battle, through the journey, if you look at it through that metaphorical lens?
I don't think it helps motivate me per se, because my motivation is just seeing my kids every day, and imagining what their life would be like if I wasn't around. I mean, for my twins, it's better now that they're older, but when they were younger, it would have meant getting taken away from the family that they know and handed off to their father, who they've, spent a weekend or two here with here and there, changing schools, changing friends, leaving the state. I mean, just catastrophic changes for them on top of grieving a mother. So for me, it was a way that they could understand it, where the impact was still there. They knew something was going on. They felt like they had the information. We also talked a lot about what would happen. What would it look like if I passed? And, you know, it was all these other people love you too, and they're going to make sure you're okay. And yes, you might have to go live with your dad, but that wouldn't mean that you wouldn't have. And we had conversations with their dad about, what does that look like for my husband who has basically raised them? And so, you know, we had a lot of those conversations as well, but just giving them enough information to feel like they're part, not of the struggle, but of the support that I was receiving and part of the help. And what they could do for me was just to be there for me and remind, you know, remind me why I'm alive. And just that, that empowered them, I think, to fully understand what was going on without making it, you know, making it Star Wars and making it just a notch animated almost, took it a little level of reality down for them. And I think that's important with kids. I think it's important for them to have the information, but also important for it to not be the only information. I also have tried really hard over the years. I mean, Maddie has never known me without cancer. And at this point, she'll have at least memories of me, which was a huge step and a big fear that I had. But just, again, making sure that the conversation and as I share my story more, it's come up in my life more. What's the balance? Where is it where I make sure that the kids don't hear the C word every day of their lives and live in that fear for me? And so there is definitely a balance between keeping them grounded in reality and having that irrational optimism, and just asking, what if this doesn't kill me? What if I get to see their children? So we dream big like that, and they know how much I want to see their kids. So that's my goal.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Cancer Horizons podcast or visit curetoday.com/podcasts. The Cancer Horizons podcast is the official podcast of Cure Magazine, the indispensable guide to every stage of the cancer experience. Find us on Facebook at Cure Today, Twitter at Cure_Today, and Instagram at Cure Today.